Good evening and welcome to the Rockers Caucus, live now. Live at Ben's next door. Next door to Ben's Chili Bowl, 12th venue. Mark, Terry, and Garland, three minds linked and locked in analysis, wit, and sagacity. Every Tuesday night, live. Live right here, 7 p.m. WPFW 89.3 FM. Welcome again, live with Terry, Mark, and Garland, and the Rockers Caucus.
Why is it always a fight? I can't get on well. Why do I throw myself into the night?
Good evening. My name's Garland Nixon. You're listening to the Rockers Caucus. I'm here with
Mark Levine.
And man, I heard some crickets chirping.
I do. Yeah. Well, first of all, my mic wasn't turned on. This is Mark Levine, and it's not our fault that Terry Kester isn't here.
No, but we are celebrating, incidentally. We're
having a non-Terry celebration.
We're happy about it, but he's not here.
If he's listening right now, I deny everything that Garland just said.
At any rate, first and foremost, we are not at, well, we use that intro, but we are not at Ben's tonight. However,
We're in studio.
However, we'll be there next week, and we have a, before we get started, Mark's got to tell us about this great guest, because you are going to want to hear about, particularly if you're like paranoid and you think the government's out to get you.
Wait
You know, Terry. Hey, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean people aren't really out to get you.
Never forget that.
Mark, what are we going to have next week at Ben's?
Even paranoics have enemies. Next week at Ben's, and I want to get a really large crowd there at 1213 U Street next Tuesday night at 7 p.m., we have got a former FBI agent by the name of Mike German, who now works at ACLU, someone I've known for some time, actually. He's a real hero. He's used to go undercover in white supremacist organizations, and in fact, in the 1990s, he stopped a lot of bombings in black churches in Los Angeles. But what he's going to talk about is how the government spies on us, and he knows it well because he's been spying us. And he spied, you know, clearly for a good cause. I don't mind that he spied on white supremacists.
Look, I'm afraid with Terry, this might just, he's close to the edge. This might just push him right over the edge.
Well, you know, it's kind of scary. Mike is going to tell us exactly how, when, and where the government spies on us, mm-hmm. something that many people have always wanted to know, what they can do, what's legal, what pushes the limit of the law, what he thinks is illegal, mm-hmm. Everything from, I mean, he'll tell you himself, but everything from the way the Bush administration would read emails to whether people go into church synagogues and mosques, probably largely mosques these days, mm-hmm. and spies on American citizens. So you won't want to miss that. Next Tuesday at 7 p.m. And if you want to ask Agent Mike German a question, the only way to do that is to come in person, and you can ask him and you can tell him you're being watched, whatever you want to tell him. He knows, he's been studying this for a very long time. The ACLU has been working on this. Of course, you are an ex-ACLU member.
Yes, sir, buddy.
You should tell people about that.
The vice president of the board and for the state of Maryland for a while.
So this is up your alley then.
Absolutely. So next week, 7 p.m., be at Ben's next door. It's right next to Ben's Chili Bowl, 1213 U Street. We're in the back on the mezzanine. 7 p.m. Be there. It's going to be a great show. And I'm sure you're going to have questions for this guy.
Yeah, you're going to want to know how much the government's spying on us, whether it's changed from Bush to Obama. Who are they spying on? Why are they spying on us? And most importantly, what's legal? And if you are being spied on, what you can do to protect your rights. So it's a very special show next week. You won't want to miss it.
And now, of course, if Mark and I don't, you know, turn up missing before next week's show,
you'll know what happened. And if you can't, obviously, come to Ben's, just turn into Pacifica, WPFW 89.3 FM, next Tuesday at 7, and you will hear all the details.
We'll do our own kind of like Harold and Kumar Escape from Guantanamo Bay, Mark and Garland Escape from Guantanamo Bay.
If we go to Guantanamo Bay, you'll know the reason
right,
why.
Yeah. Okay, so what we're talking about tonight on a Rockers Caucus. Don't forget, every 7 p.m. Every 7 p.m. Yeah, so every 12 hours. No, every Tuesday, 7 p.m., 89.3 FM, WPFW here in Washington, D.C. Or you can listen live, tell your friends if they're out of state or if you're traveling, WPFW.org, and you can listen live. All right, what are we going to talk about today? Something very interesting. After the ruckus over the, you know, the ruckus on the left, which we were fairly upset about, regarding the Obama tax cut deal.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think something that's interesting to talk about is this. And this is what I always say, the way legislators think like this. What can I get passed? And, you know.
Some think that way.
I think a lot
others
of them.
Think, what can I do to get votes?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Or what can I do to get money for my campaign?
But when they're thinking, on the odd occasion, like.
When they're actually doing good for the America.
One-tenth of 1% of the time when they're actually involved in legislation.
All right, okay, fair
they're
enough.
They're not raising money. They think, what can I get passed? Now, out here in the hinterlands, we think, what legislation do we want? What do we want to happen? We're idealistic. What is best for society? And we're dealing with people who are thinking, what can I get passed?
You may be the first person to ever call Washington, D.C. the hinterlands.
Yeah, anybody outside of that little ring around the Capitol.
Oh, okay.
I consider that the hinterlands.
People say outside the Beltway, you basically just have a ring around the Capitol.
Right around the Capitol.
You're not
there.
In that ring.
Yeah, you're in the hinterlands.
All right, okay.
With a great unwind.
As someone who used to work inside that ring.
You're right.
You know, but I'm out now.
So you would know. Okay, so here's our subject, and that is bipartisanship, practical politics, political compromise. What do you think about compromise? What do we think about compromise? How much is too much compromise? You know, you have people, and I've always said this, and that is, of course, Mark, I got to anger some of our listeners, but, you know, I like to say what I got to say. As you get further to the extreme left or extreme right, you get political rigidity. You get people who tend to say my way or the highway. You get the Tea Party on the far right. No compromise under any circumstances. We will do this. And if you do, anyone who doesn't agree with everything we say, they're all alike. That's why people can say there's no difference between Barack Obama and George Bush. Why? Because if you're politically so rigid and you're over there in your own little box, anyone who doesn't fit in that box, they're all alike.
You know, it's interesting. People on the far right and on the far left.
That's what I'm saying.
Say there's no difference between Barack Obama and George Bush because they just can't. It's all so far away from where they are that they can't see the real distinctions between those two presidents.
They're mirror images of each other. When you get to the far right or the far left, either way, you get political rigidity. When you hear people say no compromise, ever compromise, you're starting to get politically rigid because the reality is this. What are you ever going to get if you don't? Martin Luther King. There were people that were angry at him. Why? Because when they passed the Civil Rights Bill, let's face it, it was very, if you know the history of it, it was watered down a lot.
Sure.
It was watered down.
And it was step by step by step.
It was incremental. They didn't get voting rights. They got that the next year. There were promises. There were handshakes behind it. Look, go ahead and do this, and we'll get you the Voting Rights Act. And there were people that say, don't do it without everything. So there are always people who say all or nothing. There are people who say, if you don't go along with all of this, I had people call me a sellout because I said, well, you know, I think we should move forward with this healthcare reform. It's not what we want, but hey, you know what? It's a step in the right direction. I had people say, no, if it's not single payer, we don't, you know, we are not going to get anything. You're a sellout. You're a whatever. And that's the issue, political compromise. Mark, what are your thoughts? Well, before I do that, 202-588-0893. Call in. You may want to call me a sellout or a political compromiser or something like that. But hey, that's a good thing. 202-588-0893. Call in. What do you think about compromise? What do you think about what is your idea? What is your definition of bipartisanship? And what do you have to say about that? 202-588-0893. Mark.
Well, Garland, I'll be the first one to tell you that I certainly think the people that say no compromise are wrong.
Because you're a sellout.
Well, I do think half a loaf is better than none. I do think that if you can get a part of what you want, that's better than getting none of what you want. However, one can compromise too much.
Mm-hmm.
There's an art to compromise, and the art is getting as much of what you want as is possible.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if I truly believed that we could not have gotten the stimulative tax cut for the middle class and poor people and payroll tax cut, the good things in the Barack Obama compromise that just happened with the Republicans. If I didn't think we could get that without giving the Republicans their massive tax cut to billionaires and so forth, then I would have to say, as President Obama said, this is the best we can do. But I'm sorry, I don't think the president fought hard enough. See, I'm willing to say if it really, really comes to you get – you know,
part
of what you want or nothing of what you want, sure, let's get part. But I also think sometimes if you go in with that mentality, and I got to say in criticism of the president, sometimes I think he goes too often in that mentality. In other words, if you're bargaining, you're trying to get 100, I'll take 50 rather than zero.
Right.
But if you start with 50, you're more likely to get 25. And sometimes I think the president doesn't start in his corner. He doesn't start in zero.
Mm-hmm.
Let the Republicans start in 100. John Boehner, for example, the new Speaker of the House, said before he was Speaker of the House, when he was pushed by Bob Schieffer in a really good interview on Face the Nation on CBS. He said, are you going to hold hostage all the middle class tax cuts just to give the top 2% the tax cut? He said, well, because he's a compromiser as well. Mm-hmm. He said, well, if push comes to shove, no, I'm not going to hold up all of America just to give the multimillionaires a tax cut. And then all the Republicans went after him and said, what are you doing considering compromise? He said, oh, well, no, I wouldn't compromise. But see, he would have.
He would have compromised. He made the mistake of showing his hand.
Exactly.
That's all it was.
And if you've ever bargained, if you've ever been in a Latin American country or an Arab country, and that's part of the culture.
Yep.
There's no. I don't mean this in any way pejorative.
No, well,
it's part of the culture.
You bargain for everything.
I'm an ex-trial lawyer. Yeah. You know, when you settle, you don't ask for exactly what you want.
Right.
I mean, there's actually two theories of settlement. One is that you ask for exactly what you want and you don't budge. Hmm. So you meet in the middle and you don't budge. That's one way to do it. The other way, probably the more stereotypical way of bargaining, the kind that you do if you ever go to the Middle East or America, is you start with more than what you want, and then you compromise.
You track backwards,
get as much as you can. So while I agree with you in principle, if you look at it just sort of, can you get part of what you want or nothing? Well, of course you got to compromise. But sometimes I don't think that the president has been a tough negotiator.
Yeah, I agree with you.
A good negotiator. I think, just for example, of healthcare, all right? We'd all like to see Medicare for all, single payer.
Right.
The government running healthcare the way they do in 35 industrialized nations,
right,
where everybody lives longer and it costs less. We'd all rather see that. But to me, you start with that, and then you compromise on an option, a public
option
to allow the government. To me, Obama started in the middle and compromised.
That's it. And what you get is acquiescence as opposed to compromise. The appearance, even if it isn't, it appears to be acquiescence. And people don't like, hey, okay, so Allison, I think, actually has all the answers, Mark. And
we'll find out if she does.
We finally have someone with some intellect around here that can straighten us out. Allison, welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Hey, I love the Raucous Caucus.
Thank you, Allison.
Great.
Thanks. What's happening?
Well, I think it's a wonderful conversation you're having about, you know, quarterbacking the tax package that's already passed. So I wanted to ask you, what's going to happen and who's going to blink first on the debt ceiling?
Great
question.
Once
again, the Republicans are going to hold raising the national debt a hostage and see what they can get out of President Obama, who I will say I supported. I love our president, but I have to agree with the comments that you were just making in that I'm not sure he's a very hard-nosed negotiator.
Yeah, and let me say this, too, and that is this. I'm not one who – I'm an all-or-nothing person who says, well, Barack Obama's done something I don't like, so now I hate him. Look – when he came into office,
I knew that
he was going to do some things that was really going to piss me off. And I knew that he was going to do some things that would make me, you know, don't ask, don't tell, and things like that. And I jump up and I clap and, you know, the tax cut bill, and I'm ready to choke him. All these things happen. But I knew this was going to happen. So I'm not, you know, it's never as good as it looks or as bad as it looks. It's always somewhere in the middle. So, you know, let's not condemn the guy because he's done some things that we don't like.
I'll tell you, I really like Allison's question. Because there's some things that I'm willing to compromise on. Just to give you an example, on healthcare, while I support single-payer Medicare for all, I would have compromised into the public option.
Yep.
All right, that would have been a compromise, but I would have been willing to do that. But on the debt ceiling, there I'm going to say – play chicken.
I agree.
All or nothing. Let me tell you why. Of course, the game of chicken, most everybody knows what it is, but for those few of you who don't or have never seen movies from the
1950s, you have to have a rubber chicken.
You play chicken. The way you play chicken is two people get in cars and they start zooming as fast as they can right towards each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the person that swerves first technically loses. They're the chicken, and the person who didn't swerve wins. Of course, if nobody swerves, they hit, they both die, and you're both not chicken, you're just stupid. All right, so that's the game of chicken.
And the DNA pool is cleansed a little bit
more.
It's
a very scary game. However, I would play chicken with the debt ceiling, and here's the reason why. The debt ceiling has got to be extended.
Yep.
This isn't a Democratic principle, Republican principle, anarchist, libertarian, you name it. Every single American suffers if the debt ceiling is not extended, and I'll tell you why. We have a massive debt. Everybody knows it. We can argue about what to do about it. Liberals and conservatives disagree on what to do. But we have a massive debt, mostly owed to China, but also owed to Americans, everybody else. We have always in the 234 years or so of this country, we have always paid our debts. We paid our debts from the American Revolution. George Washington saw that. We paid our debts from the Civil War, which were very big debts. We've paid our debts every time. Countries that do not pay their debts immediately have higher rates of interest, right? If Greece defaults or other nations are afraid of default, it's very hard for anyone to trust them again if they don't pay their debts.
And I wouldn't want to be holding T-bonds, I'll tell you that.
Exactly. Right now, all around the world, the United States of America is considered the exact safest place to put your money. And that's good. That helps us. Because it means people lend us money. It makes our recessions less bad. And it means that in other places, when other countries are in trouble, people will put their money in the United States. That's why interest rates are so low right now. If one time we default on the debt, if one time the two cars crash and hit each other, we will never again. Never again. We can't. You know, when you say we've never defaulted on our debt in 226 years, you can only say that once. Once it happens once, we've only done it once. And the Republicans, once you say that once, we're in trouble. So I don't mean to say that this is not a massive game of chicken. It is. However, this is something that the Republicans know just as much as the Democrats, how devastating it would be for the country if we don't raise the debt ceiling. And therefore, I say no compromises.
Absolutely.
Period.
Because you don't have to. You agree.
Because at the end of the day, the Republicans will swerve.
And you don't have to. Because yeah, that's right.
They
because
have
they
to
know.
Swerve.
Because
and if they and don't swerve, then everyone, then President Obama, the night before it happens, needs to get on national TV, sit in the Oval Office, and tell Americans that Republicans are going to do something that in the worst times of the Revolution, the Civil War, George Washington and Lincoln managed to make it happen. But the Republicans are going to destroy the national interest.
Oh, our economy would fall flat.
For the rest of American history. It will destroy the economy.
They're not going to do
it. And he's going to tell every American, he should do this in the Oval Office, call your member of Congress and tell them you've got to change your mind. But he's going to say at the same time, I'm not going to give them anything for this, because you don't say I'm going to hold a nuclear bomb to the American economy unless you give me what I want. That's terrorist tactics.
Yeah, I agree. Now, once again, if you want to be a part of this conversation, 202-588-0893. Rick, what's happening?
Gentlemen, this is the presidentbyamendment.com.
Oh, Rick. What do you know?
Hey, hi, Rick.
I want to define the political center for you guys.
Okay. There's no such thing. But go
arrest
ahead.
Bush. Where's the birth certificate?
For Bush?
No, he said arrest Bush. Where's the birth certificate? That's the political center.
Right. And no Republican can say arrest Bush, and no Democrat can say where's the birth certificate, and that's why Washington's out of touch.
Well, I would argue there were some other reasons.
I've seen the birth certificate.
No, you've seen the certificate of live birth.
Yeah, but that's all that Hawaii has.
Huh?
That's what Hawaii calls a birth certificate.
Well, then I'll put it like this.
Long-form hospital birth certificate.
Well, I'll put it like
I've
this.
I've seen it.
I think we've
it's
got,
out by President Obama. I
and
think
there's
this
more
silly.
Important things in life.
Anyway, that's where the political center is, and that's why Washington's out of touch and why I may actually be president someday.
Well, I mean, that's certainly a possibility. I think you're moving in the right direction, buddy. And
let me make one other comment.
Okay,
29% of the population is convinced that Obama's American.
29%.
That's not true.
That's true.
The vast majority of Americans know that President Obama was born in the United States and is an American citizen. And the people that don't, I got to say, Rick, you're out of touch.
Well,
I was going to say, you're way out of touch.
If you
believe that President Obama was not born in Hawaii, then I got to say either you haven't taken the time to look at the evidence, or you just are so much of an ideologue.
Let me throw one in here, guys. Did you know that 84% of all statistics are made up on the spot?
I believe that.
All right, guys.
All right, thanks a lot, man. Appreciate you listening. Yeah. And but now we're going to go to Nat. Nat!
Hi, Nat. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks.
I was starting to worry if he spelled your name backwards, and it was really Ton, but it's Nat. Hey, Nat, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on? Hey, look, I wanted to basically pull, I think his name's John, his coattails on a comment he made about foreign investment in the U.S. economy.
Yeah,
and
that's Mark.
I don't think he really understands what's going on right now with the U.S. economy, because right now the dollar is basically trash. And
I don't think it's trash. I can still go buy things with it. So it's not trash. I can buy hamburgers, I can buy cars, I can buy lots of things with my American dollar. It's not trash.
Look, let me give you a perfect example. Right now, if you go to the store and you buy, say, bell peppers, right now,
I can get it with my dollars, I promise you.
But yeah, you can get them with your dollars, but it's taking, like, a lot more of your dollars to get the same bell pepper that
you used
to
get.
No, like, I don't agree.
Just a couple years ago, now you're paying like $1.20 for one bell pepper.
Well, food prices are going up right now.
I can't speak for bell pepper prices, but I do know this.
Look,
inflation is low right now. It's much lower than we've had in past. I mean, look, if it'll always be inflation. It's always 1%, 2%, 3%, 4%. But we used to have time in the 70s when inflation was 10%, 15%. So, yes, it's slowly deteriorating over time. But that's hardly trash just to say there's some inflation, right?
Well, the reason why I say that it's trash is because in the next 12 months, the U.S. dollar is not going to be the world's reserve currency unless there's a war. Otherwise, the U.S. dollar will not be the world's reserve currency.
What are you basing that on, Matt? Why do you think that?
I'm sorry?
Why do you think that? That's pretty, I mean, the people have talked for a long time, Saudi Arabia and China, about maybe whether it shouldn't be. But I haven't seen any real action on that.
Today? Do you know who's visiting?
Regarding the dollar? You're talking about the Chinese premier? What are you talking about?
Right, yeah.
Who?
That dude, Hu
Jintao.
Yeah. That dude, who was that went to China? Biden? That went to China?
Don't play that game,
okay,
Charlie.
Sorry.
Who's on first?
Who went to China? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, Gates went to China. They were over there firing missiles and stuff off when Gates went to China. China is not taking a backseat to the U.S. anymore when it comes to this currency nonsense. I'm telling y'all. If you don't buy gold and buy silver and start getting commodities right now, buying your stuff and storing it, you watch. In a year, you won't be able to afford.
You know what, Nat, you remind me of a guy that Garland and I have both met. We've both been on his show. His name is Eric Bolling. He's on Fox Business. And he and Gordon Liddy and all of the right wing make a massive profit on gold sales. In fact, G. Gordon Liddy goes Roslyn Capital. Well, why does he want you to go to Roslyn Capital? Because he gets 25% or so, and they right off the top, they don't sell you the gold. They just put it in their pockets, and they give you the gold. Gold has traditionally been, and I understand that people on the left too, it's a hedge against inflation. That's true. But if you notice, in the last 10 years, gold prices have gone up 4 or 5 or 6 times, and inflation has maybe decreased the dollar 20% or so. In other words, If you had gold,
I quadrupled my money.
Well, I suggest that you sell now because I think you're in a big bubble.
Yeah,
and I think it's going to crash.
And I was about to say this: if I had gold right now, I'd sell. And
me
I'll
too.
Tell you why: because it's the investment is very simple, very simple. Buy low.
Sell high.
What is gold right now?
It's way high,
and you should sell it. Because what happens is all these people see it high, and they think it's going to get higher. And they buy, the bottom falls out.
That's the worst time to buy.
No, right now, if I had gold,
it's already hit its peak and it's going down.
I would sell.
The reason it's going down
bit.
Is because the economy's getting better. See, when people fear the economy's bad, that's when they buy
and
gold.
The other thing
that's
is
why
this.
It's way up. The
people,
economy's getting better now.
But the other thing is this. People are buying things like that when they're afraid. When you make investments due to emotion, you make bad mistakes.
Right.
They should not be emotional. We've got, it looks like Quay. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Quay?
Clay, C-L-A-Y. You have it correct.
Oh, Clay.
Welcome to
gotcha.
The show.
I'm quite amused by your discussion. I'm glad I got to follow right behind this caller who is telling everyone to buy on the gold standard because otherwise the dollar will collapse or will no longer be used as the world's reserve currency. Unless there's a war. His caveat kind of says it all.
Well, first of all, we've always had war throughout
America.
I was going to say, there's
two or three undeclared wars that the U.S. is involved with as we speak. Yemen, Ethiopia, and I think...
Everywhere else in the world. I mean, that pretty much covers it when you say...
A particular place, Yemen, Ethiopia, I'm sorry, I guess Ethiopia, i.e. Somalia.
Right.
We're edging toward another little skirmish with, I would say, the Somali pirates. I think the United States intelligence is worried that they will somehow cross-pollinate with Al-Qaeda and then have these massive sea-going operations.
So
Obama took out those Somali pirates when he first got into office.
Yeah, those are great comments.
We're not on the gold currency, and the United States will not necessarily have the world's reserve currency. There's a point that...
Well, let me say something. Hold on. I hate to interrupt you. Let me interrupt you for one second. Can I interrupt you for one second? Is he gone? Okay, and here's why. Because I fear we may be getting a little bit off topic
just
here.
Just a little bit. Allison was on topic.
So let's come back on. Is Clay still there? Let's bring Clay back on. Clay, we're talking about compromise in politics. We're talking about working with other people. How, do you compromise? How much you compromise? We love you. We love having you listen, and you have some brilliant comments. Let's get back to the issue of compromise, and let's hear what you got to say.
Okay, well, on the issue of compromise, you got to understand what the conditions of the argument first before you do compromise. And as far as compromising on the economy, as far as compromising on the direction of the global economy, we have to admit one thing. We're not on the gold standard. We're not on the electronic credit standard. What we really are on, and I have to say this very bluntly, we're on the uranium standard. We're on the nuclear standard. Whenever an emerging country wants to get respect or wants to get more foreign aid or foreign development assistance from the United States, the winning formula seems to be the development of nuclear weapons.
Okay, well, thanks a lot. We've got Clay, we got one more person. Certainly appreciate your comments, and we appreciate you listening to the Raucous Caucus. This is 89.3 FM WPFW here in Washington, D.C. John Tay, we're going to go to a little PSA in a few minutes. But first, we got to talk to John Tay. How's it going, John Tay?
It's going great, man. Thank you guys for having your show on tonight. It's good listening.
Great. So what's your thought on compromise?
When should the Democrats and Obama compromise, and when shouldn't they?
Or should they ever?
You know, the compromise thing is a tough thing to do because you've got to throw into play vetoes. If anybody wants to make a veto, you got to also play the filibuster card, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, with where they're at right now in the House and Senate, they're always going to be threatened with someone just filibustering until they give up. So you gotta kind of draw a line in the sand as to how far you're willing to push before a compromise. And I don't know, I actually really don't know where you go with that. It's trying to satisfy your constituents and as well as hold on to your own.
Let me ask you this then. What was your thought about the whole health care compromise? Single payer, the public option?
How do you think Obama's done in general? Do you think he's compromised too much or too little or just about the right amount?
I would say, to me, I'd say a little too much,
mm-hmm.
not exceedingly. But the only reason I say that he's gone a little too much because, like you said earlier, I think he could have been a little more stern and accomplished a little bit more, gotten a little more of what he wanted before giving in. And on the healthcare compromise, I think he just I think he kind of did his own thing. I think he gave way too much on the financial compromise. On the healthcare, I think it's just right. I think he should have done a little bit more in terms of what the people wanted.
If you were in Congress, would you have voted for the final bill?
And aside from sitting down and reading the whole healthcare compromise, I don't think you could. Nothing's really come to fruition just yet, except for a couple little things. Correct?
Let me ask you this: if you were in office, would you have voted for the final bill without the public option?
Would I have voted for the final?
Yeah, the final bill, because there was a lot of people.
Well, I think
he said
he hasn't read the whole bill. So
no, I don't think I would have.
You would have? Wouldn't have?
Only because I think the biggest hinging point on the whole reason that it was a topic was to give the people a better option, and I really don't think we've done that.
Because here's a question I would throw out. This is a reality. I know a person who has lupus, right? Who had no coverage before. I know a person who has lupus who had no coverage whatsoever before. And due to one of the particular elements of the health care bill, that person has coverage now.
We should never underestimate.
What would I tell someone like that if I say, well, there wasn't enough in it and I wouldn't vote for it because there wasn't enough in it? And this person is looking at their life saying,
40 to 50 million Americans, one in seven Americans had absolutely no health care coverage and could not get it, and now they do. And I just don't think we should ever underestimate that.
Okay, well, we're going to do a PSA. We'll be back in a minute. 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893 to Raucous Caucus.
The Duke. Be at home with Duke in Washington, D.C. Be a volunteer during WPFW's Winter Membership Drive, February 3rd to the 19th. For more information or to sign up for a shift, contact Rachel Pope, volunteer coordinator, at 202-588-0999, extension 360 or email POPE_RACHEL@WPFW.org.
Into the night and back to the Raucous Caucus.
This is the Raucous Caucus with Garland Nixon.
And Mark Levine.
And once again, Mark, before we get going again, next week we're going to be at Ben's Next Door at 7 p.m. We got a big show. We want you to be there. Mark, tell us about our guest again.
You know, it's interesting. We've had a number of people call in with, let's just say there are a number of people that have all kinds of various concerns about the government and what they're doing. This is for those of you that want to know what's really going on. And frankly, for those of you that think there's a bunch of conspiracies, there are some.
That's
this is
right.
A guy who knows what there is. I've always believed in separating truth from fiction. There's all kinds of things people are afraid of that they shouldn't be. And there are all kinds of people are afraid of that they should be.
Right.
Next week, former FBI agent Mike German, special agent, a person who went undercover, is going to come and tell us exactly how, where, when, and why the government spies on us. So you'll know the limits of it. You'll know the legal limits. You'll know the practical limits. And you'll know to get a good idea of how they do it. I mean, it's really some inside stuff. People aren't going to want to miss that next week. Of course, you can always listen, 89.3 FM, 7 p.m. next week. But if you want to ask Agent German a question, you just come right there to Ben's Next Door, 1213 U Street. And
right next to Ben's Chili Bowl.
We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah. And, you know, is he going to tell us what a batteries out conversation? You know what a batteries out conversation is? Mark?
You probably know more about it than I do because you're ACLU guys.
Yeah, there is actual it comes from other things that I've done that I can tell you about, but it's actually there's an application that can be uploaded to your phone. I won't say by who it can be uploaded to your phone. As you know, a cell phone, which I have in my hand right now, is nothing but a microphone, isn't it? It's a microphone. This application uploads to your phone and basically people on the other end, whoever it might be, can listen to everything you say all the time.
It's because, called a tracking device.
Yes. Well, no.
Or a bug.
It just opens your cell phone directly to them so they can listen to your phone all the time. Now.
That's called bugging.
Right. Now, when you turn
that's
your phone.
That's illegal without a warrant.
Listen to this. When you turn the phone off, this application makes it appear to be off. The lights go off. It says it's going off, but it ain't off.
Uh-oh.
It's still on, and it's still broadcasting to where it is. Now, what the reason
now you're
I say,
scaring me.
The reason
check
I
my
say
phone.
Batteries. Remember, you're talking to a guy who was in the JTTF, Joint Terrorism Task Force. So I worked with the FBI. I know one or two things.
You'll be able to ask a lot of good questions.
But I'll be in Guantanamo Bay by the time I finish this conversation. But what I'm saying is this. The reason it's called a batteries out conversation is everyone takes their cell phone, takes their battery out, lays their cell phone on the table, lays their battery beside it. That way you have a batteries out conversation and you know no one's cell phone is being bugged.
Unless that's it's got an internal, sometimes you can
store
power and then you can take your batteries out and still record, Garland.
Oh,
I'm always trying to think one step
ahead.
Then
you take that one out. It has to be a battery.
I think you need a hammer to like bang the cell phone or leave it in the car.
Yeah, but then you got
actually one of the things that I'm going to talk to Agent German about next week is exactly that because, you know, there's actually conflicting state laws. For example, in Maryland, I know, you can't have a conversation with someone on the phone and record it. That's illegal. That's what Linda Tripp did to Monica Lewinsky 10 years ago, and she got in trouble with the law. But other states allow you to do that.
Right.
So there's all kinds of, what the police can listen to, when do they need a warrant.
And if
I'm
not mistaken, in Maryland, they won't prosecute you unless you knew. Is that true? That unless
you have to know that it's illegal.
It's weird the way
it's done. I don't know about
it's that. Something weird. Look into the Tripp
rarely
case.
Rarely do you have to know something's illegal before you're prosecuted.
It's pretty weird. It's pretty weird. Look into the Tripp case. It all came out. I forgot how that works. But whatever the case, let's get back to compromise. And let me ask you this. If the health care bill, because a lot of times we talk about compromise, here's what it comes down to, okay, when you talk about this. All or nothing. A lot of times it comes down to all or nothing. For instance, in the health care bill, in financial reform, at one point it got down to this. this is what we have. There's some really nice things. You can keep your kids on until they're 26 or whatever. You can.
Everybody's were, covered. That's yeah, the heart of what's
lot
of, in the, of
a lot of people are going to have Medicaid. You have people now who were covered. There were a lot of people the issues with, what was it, pre-existing conditions.
Sure.
So there are a lot of people that couldn't get coverage before that could get coverage now.
There are people who had coverage for years, Garland, got sick, and then just after they paid their premium year after year after year, the insurance company said, oh, you're sick, it's expensive, we're cutting you off.
Or maxed out. They said, hey, you know what, you
lifetime,
had $1 million.
That's right, yeah, that's gone too. Yeah. There's a lot of
so
good things in the bill.
So there are a lot of people who didn't have it. Now, if you say, well, I wouldn't have voted for it because it didn't have enough in it, then you're saying, you're the kind of person, you're saying all or nothing. If I can't get everything that I want, then I'll go with nothing. So 202-588-0893. If you feel as though you wouldn't have voted for it or would have voted for it, why don't you call me and tell me why you wouldn't have voted for it?
I'll tell you, Garland, one thing that's interesting is
or
that
would have.
The Republicans right now, and they're going to do this, I think, tomorrow. They're going in the House to pass a bill repealing.
I'm so happy to hear that.
The entire health care reform bill. Now, it's going to go nowhere. Senate's never going to pick it up. Harry Reid's never going to touch it. It's purely about politics. But here's the interesting thing. I understand pure politics. I get it. Democrats have done it too. Mm-hmm. You want to say, this is where we are. This is what we support. But here's the interesting thing. The Republicans do not have anything to replace it with.
No.
See, they say repeal and replace, and yet they're all about repeal because they can't agree.
Right.
The main thing Republicans are trying to do is protect the profits of health insurance companies.
Yep.
You may remember back at the time when they were talking about public option, the health insurance companies complained, and they said, we can't have a public option. We can't compete with the government. The government does a better job at a cheaper price,
yep,
and we can't make any profits if we have to compete with the government. We've got to keep the government out of the healthcare business,
right,
so we can charge more to people and give less back and make bigger profits, because we all know that in Europe and Japan and Australia and New Zealand, what do? They charge. It costs less because their governments take care of it, and the people live longer. And we can't have that here because our shareholders won't make enough profits.
There's one other thing too, which is interesting for the people who were against it, who were the single payer people who were against this. The Republicans also said this is just the first step to single payer. They said, a lot of Republicans said, this is just a step.
Tell me what single payer is, because a lot of people don't.
Single payer. Medicare is single payer.
Right.
It means the government.
Basically a Medicare-like system.
Medicare for every Medicare. The Republicans were saying, this is just the first step, and eventually, if they get this, before you know it, everybody, they're going to have universal coverage. Now, there were people on the left who were single payer people, who were for, you know, open Medicare for all, who were saying, nah, I don't want this to happen because it's not single payer. But the people on the right recognized the reality that in incremental politics, this is the road to get there. Tanya, can you straighten us out on this healthcare thing? We're all confused.
Hi, Tanya.
How are you?
Wonderful.
Welcome.
Good. I was calling because this is near and dear to my heart. I have a soon-to-be 19-year-old, mm-hmm, who is at home, not in college, not in the military, and we just got a letter from our dental insurance company as well as our regular insurance company that she no longer has coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. They can't do that.
Well, we got the letter.
Well, here's what you do. You go, are you in Maryland or D.C.?
Yes, I am. I'm in Maryland.
You're in Maryland. Okay. Is Chris Van Hollen your congressman? He's a good guy. Is he a congressman?
No,
someone else. Do you know who your congressman is?
I have Barbara Mikulski and Steny Hoyer.
Oh, Steny Hoyer. He's a good man. All right. Here's what, and Barbara Mikulski, and you also have Ben Cardin, you're the senator. Call either of your senators or call Steny Hoyer and say, wait a minute. Under the health care law, I'm told you have a policy, right? You through your employment, you, mm-hmm, have some kind of health insurance. Am I right? Okay. Under the new plan, you are allowed to put your child under it, mm-hmm, until he is 26 years old, and that's already gone into effect as of January 1st. Now, I don't know if that letter was dated in December.
She could actually
or not.
Call the AG's office for Maryland.
There's a lot of people you could call.
I would
call your member of Congress, but you could call the AG. You can also call the federal government. Call the Department of Health and Human Services.
Oh,
Kathleen
yeah,
Sebelius. There's a lot of people you can call. They can't do this to you, and you want to see the power of the health care law. It should empower you. Don't fight back. Don't take it. Because I'll tell you, the health insurance companies often rely on people's ignorance. They send you a letter because they think that you'll just walk away. You have every right to keep your children until they're 26 under your plan, and your member of Congress should sort it out. I bet you Steny Hoyer's staff would be really good in handling that. But also Barbara Mikulski, Ben Cardin, Health and Human Services.
Or again, the Attorney General's Office for the State of Maryland, because this health care company has to be licensed to operate in Maryland.
That's true.
In fact, the Insurance Commission for the State of Maryland.
Yep.
You can call the insurance commission. So there's any.
The only reason I mentioned the federal government first is because it's a federal law, and I guarantee you, Cindy Hoyer's staff is well up on exactly what you need to do.
So you can. But definitely, if all else fails, call the insurance commission because they have to be licensed, and the insurance commission would I'm sure looking at. So there's any number of resources.
Did they give you a reason why they said they were dropping your son?
She said because of her age, she's 18, about to turn 19.
See, that's exactly what they can't do. That's exactly what they can't do under the new law. Was the letter dated in December? I'm just curious.
You know what? I think we did get it right before Christmas.
There you go. See, the law went into effect January 1st. This is what the health insurance company's doing. They're playing tricks. What they're saying is, we're going to send this letter out because we legally can do so in December. And we're going to convince you to think that it's gone because they knew that come January 1st, they couldn't do that. So they send you a letter out in December, and really it only would have applied from, you know, Christmas until the 31st. But they think you're going to go away. Very, very sneaky.
Yeah,
very
sneaky. Think about this. Think about this.
Because the law went into effect January 1st.
Think about this. If they drop you in December, right? Then in January 1st, you might have to apply for reinstatement or something like that.
I don't know. Stanley Hoyer's office will know, and they'll look it up.
They're playing games, and it's illegal, and your daughter should have legally
covered. My husband's still paying for the family coverage.
That's right.
They've got to cover.
Your kids need to be covered.
Yep, that's the law.
Fight the power.
There we go.
Perfect.
Wonderful. 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893 if you want to join this discussion.
But this is an example. You know, Tanya's call is an example of all the people that say, you know, we shouldn't have compromised at all.
Right.
I mean, Tanya's children are going to be helped by this law. And it's not perfect. And I think the Canadian system's better. I think the English system's better. I'm not saying that we're in nirvana here.
Right.
But when you look at, again, as you mentioned it, whether it's civil rights laws, health care laws, Social Security began small. Medicare began very small.
Yep.
And I remember the Republican. I don't remember. I wasn't around in the 1930s, but I know the history. The Republican,
Terry would probably remember.
Terry might. They were trying to repeal Social Security as soon as FDR did it. And it took some time. It was easier to repeal it in 34 and 36 because Americans didn't quite know what it was going to do. But once people understood that they were going to get a guaranteed pension, they wouldn't have to worry about retirement. They knew that they were going to get at least some minimum benefit.
Yep.
They put in Social Security is one of the most popular programs.
Well, let me say this about this.
And this health care reform, give it 2-4 years to work. It will be, mark my words, as popular as Social Security and Medicare.
Let me throw this in there. And that is, I would actually thank the Republicans for trying to repeal it. I'll tell you why. Because they have been fairly successful in putting, you know, painting an ugly face on that. And enough so that got
Obamacare, you know, they call it.
They've got a significant amount of people in the United States who feel, oh, it's a bad thing. But the reality is they know nothing about it, but they've been told it's a bad thing, so they think it's a bad thing. Okay.
And when you individually poll each of the specific things, putting your kid on to 26, covering everybody's pre-existing
condition, all for it.
70%, 80%, 60%, each element of the bill people support. But when you put it all together, you call it Obamacare.
Now, listen to this.
People are scared because they don't trust Obama.
If you're in Congress, if you're a House member and you're a Democrat, listen to me right now. I'm telling you, I got the plan. You ready?
Really?
Yes, I got the plan. Okay.
If they follow this plan, do we get the House back in 2012?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Listen up, members of Congress.
Thank the Republicans for doing this. Here's why. It's a tremendous opportunity. I would have hearings. I would march people out whose lives have been saved, such as Tanya, whose children have been covered. I would do everything I could you can't have hearings because they're
charged. I'm just going to get to that. There's a flaw in your logic, Garland.
But you can do
the Democrats
can't hold hearings in the Capitol because they're not in charge.
Right.
But there's things they can do.
They can hold shadow hearings the way John Conyers used to do when
so
Bush
what
was
they
in
can
office.
Do is you can bring you can have forums different places.
Sure.
You can have town hall meetings
in
your districts.
Absolutely, you can.
And get C-SPAN there, et cetera. And bring people out whose lives have been saved, whose children have been covered, who have pre-existing conditions. Show real people who have put real faces on people who have a better life or a life at all now because of this. Have people, real people say, my life was saved.
Yeah.
They didn't sell it right the first time.
Now they can sell it the second time.
So, they're giving you an opportunity to go out. Before, it was theoretical that you were going to save lives. Now, put people in front of the TV and American people whose lives have been saved. Shove this right back down a Republican's face.
Let me suggest something. Then have them say,
well, we're going to repeal it so this person will die.
Let me suggest you something. The reason why the Republicans are doing it first thing, why they're going to do it tomorrow, is they don't want to give the Democrats time to set up all those hearings and all. And then by the time they set it up, they'll say, we've already voted on that.
Ned,
let's go to Ned. I don't know that it's a great solution.
I think it'll work, man.
All right, we'll see.
Ned.
I statistically, you have to draw more people in.
Of course.
Then when you talk about self-reliance and conduct your behavior in such a way where you're not going to have to need the pool that you contributed to justifiably.
Well, Ned, are you saying that it's always people's fault when they get sick?
No, I'm not. But there are certain performance things, but I'm saying we all need to be included in the actuarial pool to make it viable.
Absolutely.
Agreed.
But then you make your personal choices whether you do other things than that you either need or do not need the services that you've contributed to.
The thing is,
the Republicans don't understand statistics.
Right.
They didn't want to during the last, not this one, the census, where they knew you could do some things statistically, and they said no. They don't believe in statistics.
They don't care about statistics. Argue by anecdotes.
They don't care about statistics.
Because that's the way that, I mean, that's why people are like, oh my God, the cost of bell peppers went up. We are facing collapse.
Statistics, you're talking about real information and data. They're not interested in that stuff.
And we have one out of three kids are unhealthy because you have pesticides and herbicides going into the food. I was raised in the 50s. We had our own garden. But it's happening, and to deny that reality, the thing that made this country great was a seven-step scientific method. But you can't proceed beyond a false premise.
Correct.
And that's the problem. We're not calling anyone on the false premise.
Oh, man, I love this guy, Mark. You are preaching to the choir. I'm with you. Keep going, Ned.
No, man, I worked for Senator Kennedy back in the late 70s.
Good for you.
I could go on and on. But we really need to have critical thinking as part of the excitement of what we do.
But, Ned, let me tell you something. As someone who I frequently go on CNBC and Fox, and I argue with right-wingers all the time, and it's really hard to do critical thinking in a 30-second spin by. And frankly, if they give me 30 seconds, that's a lot.
Usually I get about 10 or 15.
The 9 seconds, the guy couldn't give a response.
Before you cut off.
CBS did a thing where they wanted everyone to give 30-second responses, and they couldn't fill that.
Right. So what they'll generally do is they'll throw out some fear tactic. You know, buy gold, we're all going to heck.
Yeah.
And therefore
which would be true if we all bought gold.
Name-calling. You have to look for indicators. When someone uses them, bureaucrats.
Right.
You know,
I had a guy say that to me just the other day on air.
Critical thinking is, when I was in undergraduate school in business, one of my best professors said, look, the big thing you have to learn when you're reading things is how to cull bias.
That's really good. I'll tell you something, Ned. I was on the air just a few days ago, and a conservative talked about the nameless, faceless bureaucrats in Washington. And I said, you know what? I live in Washington, D.C., and guess what? People have names, and they have faces, and most government workers are pretty damn hardworking.
They work for less money
than you do in the private sector, and I'm sure you'll find people who slack off in any job, but the vast majority of them are dedicated public servants doing
their
best to help you, and you just slandered a whole bunch of friends of mine.
Right.
And the guy looked like his eyes were caught in the headlights. I said, don't you know anybody who's a dedicated public servant? Are you telling me that every single person in government is a nameless, faceless bureaucrat? And, the host cut me off. But you get the idea.
I work with veterans, and we are working with different agencies, agriculture, labor, what have you. There are phenomenal bureaucrats.
I am tired of people attacking government workers.
Throw at the baby with the bath, because we have tremendous people working for us nationally in all these agencies.
Yep.
We do.
Well-educated people.
We do. Exactly. People who make when I worked for Congress, and maybe I'm a little defensive because I used to work there.
Go ahead.
And I'm really glad that you did too, Ned. The vast majority of people I was working with, and it's not just the Democrats. Republicans too.
Right.
They believe in what they believe. They come to Washington. Most of them, and the ones that do it to pad their pockets, I say throw them all in jail. I hate corrupt people who go in the lobbying and then use their ties to make money. So I'm not defending them. But most of us really went in there because we were idealistic. I'll tell you, I was a trial lawyer out in California. I saw Bush v. Gore. I couldn't believe that the Supreme Court was choosing the president when the majority voted for Gore and the Electoral College would have voted for Gore because he won in Florida, and they're picking Bush. I decided my country needed me. I dropped everything, took a massive pay cut, and ran, and I've lived in Washington ever since.
Yeah.
A lot of people are idealistic and are just trying to help their country. And when people denigrate public servants, we end up not getting the idealistic right. people. We get, frankly, the people who are corrupt and just trying to make money
and,
off of
and they're more the good ones. The other thing, the mental health, one of the other losses we had with the Gore loss was Tipper was big
yes.
on mental health.
Right, right, right.
And,
very good.
We would have had that. And nothing that illiteracy for kids isn't important, but this is such an important thing because I worked with schizophrenics, and it's yeah. it's like a broken leg. It's like being an electrician with the way the brain works.
Well, look at what just happened with the
Jared Laughlin.
Yeah,
exactly,
with Jared Laughlin,
exactly.
you know?
You know,
people,
the
there's a lot
is,
of homeless people.
Well, then you get into the Reagan thing where
exactly.
he released everybody.
Exactly.
And people that had problems couldn't go to community centers because
right.
they didn't exist at
right.
that point.
You know, I remember, I'm still...
The people in hospitals and in beds in these hospitals.
The institutionalization. Yeah.
I'm going to give away my age a little bit by admitting that I remember, just barely, the 1970s. And I remember when the 80s started, and then suddenly I saw homeless people
yep.
all over the place. I never saw them
deinstitutionalization.
Before.
Deinstitutionalization. I remember when he did that.
That suddenly Ronald Reagan became president, and suddenly...
I'm tearing up right
No, no,
here.
People
you know,
who were institutions.
I was born in 1945. You know, I was born the same year of the atomic bomb and the United Nations. We can go with do with that, but
no. But I remember
yeah.
when we first started seeing homeless. Yeah. I mean, it used to be rare. Uh-huh. It used to be, oh my God, look, there's a homeless person.
You didn't even really know what the term homeless person.
It would be like, wow,
there.
What is that? What is who is that person? And I mean, today you walk in any major American city and you see homeless person after homeless person, and people
it's sad.
So when did
forget
you see your first homeless person
in the early 80s. In the early 80s.
Can you document that one? Because I can document when I saw my first sign in Alabama that said only white people should drink after this fountain in the
yeah.
summer of 59.
Luckily, so. I was born after most of that.
Okay, so when were you born?
I gotta get
oh,
my
no,
age.
We're not
gotta
telling you that, buddy. Oh,
yeah.
no, you're
Come
not
on,
getting
man,
that.
What? I was born in 1945.
yeah.
So what?
But, you know, sadly, homelessness is becoming as American as apple pie. How
it really
sad is that?
It really
that
is.
We just accept it as though it's a normal part of
not working. That's
yeah.
the problem. We have to see it early because it's happening more and more. I'm serious. If you don't see it now, it's going to come up and bite us. And it is.
So Ned, let me just ask you.
Walter Reed.
Before you go.
We can do some things when that property closes and a cluster of VSOs and... unions will use it as a facility to bring help to veterans and their families.
Ned, let me ask you before you go, okay, because you used to work for Senator Kennedy. You know, like I do, what it's like to work in the legislature. When do you think, going back to our topic, when do you think it is proper to compromise, and when do you think you should stand firm, and how do you know when to do which?
Well, you have to speak to truth, and it's like the scientific method. You're saying, look, it's like peer review. I believe in this idea. Am I a jerk? Or, you know, tell me where I'm flawed.
But when do you give up on something that's not perfect?
You're never defensive. You're just always inquisitive about an idea that you think makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have your other peers.
But
wait,
but when do you compromise?
Crap,
you know, Ted Kennedy, great example. Someone who fought his entire life for universal health care, and unfortunately, basically, he cast his vote just to get it. Frankly, it was one of the last things he did before he died, and then we got to Scott Brown. Yeah. But when do you think?
Camel's nose under the tent. At least we do this. The thing is, don't dilute it. Amend it.
Right.
You know, that's why this whole okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I think that's a good point. Don't dilute it. Amend it.
And I think this. Let me just add this. And that's why I think it was really a good thing. Let's just say the Democrats were able to get the House back, et cetera, et cetera. Between now and 2014, they may be able to get a public option. You know what I mean? You fight yeah. for – you get what you can get, and then you fight for a little bit more, and you fight for a little bit more. That's why I believe, you know, in some form of compromise, I do believe – I don't believe in all or nothing. I don't believe that when you look up and you see some things that you really like and some things that you don't really like, you throw them all out and say, well, if I can't get everything
I want,
I won't take it. And unfortunately, there are a lot of people who are friends of mine who ideologically I am absolutely aligned with, and I believe in the same things they believe in. Our values are identical. However, when it comes to the end result and when it comes to how you get it, I'm willing to, you know, take a little bit of hurt along with the good. And they're saying,
I know, I mean, because I'm a guy, man, we have to stay in Afghanistan. We can't leave. You know, we're caught in this thing. But then I have liberal, whatever, I don't liberal. You say, no, we got to get out. We can't. we got into this.
Well, the thing is, there's degrees, and people who have an all or nothing mentality. I mean, for example, President Obama says there's no more combat troops in Iraq. Okay, we have left and we are leaving, but we still got a number of troops there too. So there's all kinds of ranges there, and when people learn to think in grays, because let's face it, most of the world is gray. Very little of the world is black and white.
Right.
And as long as people can see the grays, then they can know where, you know, make a decision on a continuum rather than just all or nothing.
I think you hit the nail on the head, Mark, and that is grays, and that is degrees, and that is understanding that there are areas that it's not either or. It's not that Manichaean thing where, you know, the world is pure good versus pure evil.
Right.
Be curious, not necessarily decisive. I mean, Socrates didn't know shit. The guy walked all over Athens just asking questions.
Well, so thanks a lot, Ned. I certainly appreciate you calling in.
Thank you, Ned. All right. I'll tell you, as we close, one of the issues that's going to come up in the next Congress is it's a civil rights issue, and it has to do with the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, the idea that you can't discriminate against gay and lesbian people. And there's an interesting question of compromise because there's enough votes to pass that, but the transgender community also want, and I support, I don't believe in discrimination against anybody.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't either. But the question is, do you pass a law, because the Republicans aren't going to allow that one to go through,
right.
Do you pass a law that helps a large group of people when you can't help everyone? You know, and blacks got rights at a different time that women got rights,
yep.
And to me, you have to work for everyone to have equal rights, and sometimes you gotta take something and then push ahead for something more.
Absolutely. When you see an opportunity to get opportunity to gain something,
if anyone
you
gets
might
help,
not,
you
yeah,
should support.
You
it.
Might not get that opportunity again.
That's
so
right.
When you get an opportunity,
you help
to
as
help
many
help,
as you can,
do it,
and then you keep fighting. You don't stop fighting, but you keep fighting.
People
for more.
Forget, you know, with Martin Luther King, they forget about the entire civil rights movement. Last time I checked, they fought for 100 years, from like the
Jim Crow laws,
mid-1860s till the mid-1960s. 100 years of getting the vote. They didn't say, we got the vote, but we
Thurgood
didn't get
Marshall.
They took the vote.
Brown versus Board of Education was not they didn't start with desegregation of schools. First, they desegregated law schools. Thurgood Marshall had a whole multi-year plan.
The entire civil rights movement was, when you talk about incremental politics, 100 years?
I'll tell you something.
Yesterday,
it was slow. Yesterday was, of course, devoted to Dr. King.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I think Martin Luther King really Jr. really understood well, and frankly, sometimes I think Malcolm X didn't get it as well, although I think he got it more
at the end,
of his life.
Before he passed away,
Is that sometimes when you move things step by step by step, you set a dynamic, and people who are afraid of radical change, they see more, and suddenly
it creeps
you
up
know
on them.
you're there. Absolutely, you're there, and so I think that's one of the things that King very much understood, the art of, and sometimes he didn't compromise, right? He did the March on Washington.
Yeah.
John Kennedy told him not to, and
he
went
anyway.
On. That was truly a master tactician, someone who understood where we need to go and how to get
when
there.
When to play your hand
and
when to hold
you,
it.
We need more leaders.
Well,
let
me finish
King.
That last couple of questions, but let me say this before we leave in honor of Dr. King, and just one thing that Dr. King believed in that I want to say in honor of his birthday, and that's this. One thing Martin Luther King believed in is this. Anyone, and I'm putting in my own words, anyone can be nice to people who are nice to you. The most evil tyrant in the world can be nice to people who are nice to you. What gives a person an opportunity for a great life is a person who can be nice and kind to people, even when they aren't nice and kind to you. That's what set Martin Luther King apart. That's what set God. People who could be kind
Turn
and loving.
Turn the other cheek, perhaps?
Right. But people who could be kind and loving, even to those who weren't kind and loving to you. I think that's what Martin Luther King was about. That's what he believed in.
Nonviolence.
That's right. It was his internal love and his internal goodness, regardless of how the other party act. That's what Martin Luther King was about. Mark, if somebody wants to get in touch with you.
You could go to my website. Go to marklevineradio.com. Or actually, I'm just starting to Twitter. That's Mark Levine TV, so you can get my tweets if you'll sign up
oh,
for
gosh,
that.
Oh, gosh, I don't want them. Okay, if you want to get in touch with me, just email me, garlandn@gmail.com, or you can Facebook me. You're listening to 89.3 WPFW here in Washington, D.C. My name
Join
is Garland.
Join us next week.
Oh, man, 7 o'clock at Ben's Next Door. Peace. We're out of here.
WPFW, Washington.